Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the Matrix shit. Let's go hook him up!
I'm your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm joined by my co-host, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Greetings and salutations, Edward. How are you this evening?
Just freaking out like normal because as soon as the theme music started, my phone disconnected, and I was in a race to call back in, put in the code, the password before the song ended. But luckily, I'm such a professional that I was able to do that. So everything's all good. And we have our other co-host on the line, Katrera. What's going on, Katrera?
Crazy.
And man of many words, as always. So anyway, it seems like, unfortunately, I'm getting sick and tired of having to pretty much start the conversation on this show the last few weeks and having to announce that another wrestler who I've grown up on and watched for years has passed away. And and following Tommy Rogers' footsteps and Dusty Rhodes' footsteps, now Buddy Landell has passed away, the Nature Boy Buddy Landell. And also a very old women's wrestler from the golden age of women's wrestlers back from the Mildred Burke days, Cora Combs, who some people who are me and Couture's age might remember Debbie Combs, her daughter, wrestling, but she also passed away. She died at 90-something, so that's not sad. I think that's it's funny because I hear people say, oh, it's sad that she died. It's like, she lived to be 90-something. She had a good, long life. That's not to be sad about compared to Buddy Landell, who was, I'm not sure how old he was. How old was he, Couture?
I think he's like 53 years old.
Yeah, you know, he had many years to go, and I would say me and Couture watched Buddy Landell a lot more than Craig did. So, Craig, I'll let you start off. Do you have any memories or thoughts on Buddy Landell?
Not many, to be honest with you. I remember the NWA. I don't want to call it an invasion they did with WWE, but I remember him briefly there in that with Cornette and the Rock and Roll Express. But
no, you're thinking of Jeff Jarrett.
Buddy Landell was not part of that at all.
No.
Okay, well, off to a great start here.
Well, they yes, both have albino white hair, so, I mean, I guess you could see how you could get them.
Okay, well, all right.
He did start watching wrestling a lot later than we did. I mean, we've been watching wrestling for a lot longer, and so, yeah, we're more familiar because he really hadn't been in. Oh, go ahead.
He came into the WWF in like December of '95 mm-hmm. for like a few days. It was for like one day of taping. He was at the In Your House show in December of '95 when Dean Douglas was supposed to wrestle Ahmed Johnson and he was injured. So he brought out Buddy Landell as his graduate student, what he called him. So, and then he worked the next night. He wrestled Bob Holly on Raw and actually got a WWF title match on against Bret Hart on. You remember WWF Mania that came on Saturday mornings on USA? With the
kinda, they've had so many.
It was one with Todd Pettengill in the studio. Todd Pettengill in the studio on Saturday morning. It was like the one that came. It was the show that was before they started doing Livewire. You know, the call-in shows that they used to do. Yeah, and he got a title match against Bret Hart aired on Saturday morning, and I think he broke his ankle. He slipped on some ice outside the arena, and that was it for his career there.
Yeah, he had a lot of things. Oh, go ahead, Craig.
I was just going to ask. He wasn't part of the NWA thing, but he was with Cornette and Smoky Mountain?
Yes, that's right. He was like the final months of Smoky Mountain. He was.
Okay.
I don't know if you might have seen the. You ever seen the match he had with Shawn Michaels?
Yes, it was off
he
of
had
the their big show.
It was the Super Bowl of Wrestling in '95.
Yes,
'95.
Yeah, there's some there's some handheld footage of that. It wasn't actually on the commercial tape, right?
No, it was on the commercial tape because I got the DVD.
Like
about a decade ago when they were bringing out those Wrestling Gold DVDs with Dave and Jim Cornette.
Mm-hmm.
And they
mm-hmm.
also brought out those, like the Smoky Mountain Wrestling. The first year was the Night of Legends, and then they had like the Super Bowl of Wrestling or something, and they had Dave and Jim Cornette doing like alternate commentary on there, so I bought a couple of those off like Amazon. But
I got all of them but that one. I got all of them but that one.
Yeah. And then the matches on there, so.
Well,
the match with Shawn was the start of his babyface turn because he cut this awesome, incredible, awesome promo like the week before when that he didn't want Cornette interfering in his matches, and he cut like a shoot promo about all his drug problems and, you know, going through his whole history in the business to build up the match. So, pretty good.
Cool. Yeah, he's one of these guys, like you mentioned, slipping on the ice, and he's one of these guys who has always had things kind of hold him down, a lot of them his own doing, like you said, his drug problem. He had a bad drug problem, and was his own worst enemy at times, especially during his peak years. And it not just affected his performances. I would imagine, I never thought like he had like a good body, even back when bodies weren't like, you know, at a, like they were a few years later where everyone had to be jacked up. He never had that good body. And I'm assuming the party lifestyle kept him from going to the gym more than he should have. But basically, I started hearing about him first through the Aftermag, and then seeing him a little bit in Crockett and in Mid-South. And I at the time, it's like he's like, there's a bunch of wrestlers when I was a kid that I didn't think very much of. But then when you get older and you start watching wrestling with different eyes, you kind of see things differently. And then it's like, you know what, this dude was pretty good. And it's too bad he held himself back because he could have done more and been more in the business. He was a great promo, and he was decent in the ring. I mean, he wasn't, you know, basically he was the best way to describe Buddy Landell is to say he's a second or even third rate Ric Flair. With the hair, the same color, the Nature Boy name. They both had man tits, but Ric Flair was clearly in much better shape. And but he was decent, and he cut a good promo. But like I said, when I was a kid, I was like, man, I could kick his ass if I grow up and train and become a wrestler. I know I could kick his ass. But, you know, part of that's actually, you know, them being as good as they were. And what were your thoughts on Buddy Landell's pitcher?
He was, you know, I started watching in 85, and that's when he was right there when he was in Jim Cargo Promotions. He was managed by J.J. Dillon, and he was feuding with, he helped turn Ron Bass babyface. They were doing they were both managed by J.J. Dillon, and they were doing the thing where they would, you know, there'd be like a miscue in a tag match, or someone would interfere in the other matches. And he was so great at playing like a pussy heel, because like when he's confronted by Ron Bass, he's like all apologetic and I don't want any trouble. But then when he turns his back, he gets all bowed up and puts his fists up until Ron Bass turns around and sees him. and he gets pissed off about it. And he had some great matches with Terry Taylor that year, the national heavyweight title. He beat Terry Taylor for the national title at Starrcade that year. And it was like about maybe a month later, they were going to switch things, and it was that JJ was going to go with Tully, and Baby Doll was going to be with Buddy Landell, and apparently he couldn't even get up, but one of the TV tapings, you know, on Saturday morning, and I think he was rooming with like Black Bart or somebody, and Bart tried to get him up. He said, "I'll be there in a little while," and he never showed up, and Dusty called him, and I think he hung up on Dusty, and that was kind of it. He did one of the Phantom title changes where all of a sudden Dusty's a national heavyweight champion, went in like New Mexico or something where they never even ran shows. So
yeah, he was, like I say, he was his own worst enemy. And then he also had an effect on other people, because if I'm not mistaken, you remember when Hollywood John Tatum and Jack Victory had to lose to Wild Bill Irwin and Bad Boy Leroy Brown because they were pissed off at John Tatum for missing a show? Weren't they out, like him and Buddy, out doing coke that night? And that's why John Tatum and Jack Victory had to lose the titles because they missed, because John and Buddy were out partying. I think that's the story I've heard.
I'm not sure exactly what the story was. Nobody was in. He was actually on that show where they lost the titles, because he had just came back, and he had like what you would call a cup of coffee in the UWF, which was like 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I think he was going to replace John Tatum, because remember Tatum got in that car wreck where he was like drunk and killed somebody, and I think he broke his legs or something like that.
Yeah, he
was in the car with him, died or something like that. But then he was gone also, so I'm not sure if that was his fault. You know, Tatum probably didn't need no help getting fired, to be honest with you. So.
Yeah, they both those guys have the same reputation, really, which is unfortunate because they were both really good. They just never lived up to their potential, physically, wrestling, why everything. You know what I mean? They just other examples like the drug lifestyle, like cutting a lot of careers short. You know what I mean? There's a lot of guys who had a good couple, 2-3 years, that were like, you think that they're guaranteed Hall of Famers, and then, you know, the drugs kind of cut their careers short, and then the next thing you know, it's like you barely remember them, you know.
He's kind of like a Gino Hernandez, if you think about it, if he didn't die from, you know, from the drug. So, when you get in a car wreck and go to the hospital, I don't want to say something bad about the dead, but stay in the hospital. Don't check yourself out, please.
You don't want to do that. I mean, because, yeah, that's just bad, but
I had the story of it. You know, he had a daughter that died this year from a toxic shock syndrome. Same thing Mike Von Erich had. You know,
really, I didn't even hear that story. I haven't read Dave.
Yeah, it was in the Observer. So
wow, that's sad.
Just went in for like a routine thing. I think a routine thing in like December, like last December, and there were complications, and she ended up dying in like March, very young. So.
Well, I mean, like the Michael and Eric thing, it was like pretty routine. It was not a major shoulder operation.
It was just like a shoulder surgery. I think that toxic shock is like more common in women than men. Very rarely it happens to a man.
But if you get it, it's pretty bad news.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, David. Let's be honest, David. I mean, not David. Mike probably passed away long before his body actually did, if you know what I'm saying. I mean, because he was never the same, you know. And
I think it got to like, didn't he have like 104 degree temperature, something
for
like that.
For days, not just like for a little while. He had that for like a long
time. And I mean,
afterwards,
I mean, it kind of fried his brain. You could tell afterwards, you know, he wasn't.
Yeah.
He wasn't right.
Even if his daughter survived, she'd probably still be like that, suffering from different effects. So, I mean, either way, it's sad. But, yeah, I didn't know that. That's, wow. I need to read that, the bio and stuff, because Like, I always knew who he was, but he was never, like, one of my favorites. And like I said, he never stayed long enough to where you could become one of your favorites, because he was always kind of in and out, one of those guys who just print territories for, like, you know, in the mid-'80s and stuff. And like I said, he always had that, like, second-rate Ric Flair look to him, you know what I mean? So you had Ric Flair, so it was always kind of hard to take Buddy Choo Choo seriously, because it was like he wasn't Ric Flair. You know, Ric Flair was good enough to. He got lucky because he came in at the very, very end of Nature Boy Buddy Roberts' thing, where he was the far superior one at the time, and not the case of Buddy Landell. Ric Flair was in his prime. You know, he gave him into his prime, or just had been into his prime, and it's how can he be the next version when the first version's head and shoulders above you? You know what I mean? I got the chance to actually see him live.
He's at that first Crockett Cup that I was at, and he teamed with Bill Dundee, and they had one of the best matches on the show against Steve Williams and Terry Taylor.
Did you watch the video that Couture sent, Craig?
Not only did I watch it, I took detailed notes on the whole thing.
Huh. I just saw the angle.
What did you think of, Craig? What we're talking about anyway is the famous angle from 1986 in Memphis, when it was Buddy Landell and Bill Dundee, and they had Jeff Jarrett. I can't remember was he like 17 years old or something?
They said 18 or 19.
Yeah.
I could quickly run down the whole show because it was a show storyline.
Okay,
so,
go ahead.
That's
fine.
Okay.
You just watch the angle, right, Ed?
Well, I flipped to get to the angle, but I pretty much I saw what was going on, so.
Okay. Go ahead, Craig.
Okay. So we had CWA Championship Wrestling out of Memphis, March 8th, 1986. We had Lance Russell and Dave Brown. They opened up the show and ran down matches. The first match, Dirty Road. They didn't have any graphics on any of the wrestlers, so if I get somebody's name wrong, well, I've already got something wrong, so don't worry about it.
It was pretty lowbrow back then as far as the TV show.
Yeah. So Dirty Rose wrestled Benny Trailer, and this was the first time they introduced Mr. Jeff Jarrett as a referee. Skinny kid, like I said, 18, maybe 19, and as we later find out, 1 year out of high school. So Road drops a butterfly suplex, and he hits a big elbow and beat Trailer in less than a minute. The funny thing is here, Trailer didn't know how to take a bump. What a guy.
A lot of people in Memphis, they didn't.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of that on this show.
Memphis was a great territory, but some of the wrestlers there were just, like, god-awful.
Yeah, they weren't like the jobbers on WTBS.
Jobbers on WTBS are way better than these guys.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Way better. Lance Russell interviewed the Mod Squad and their manager, J.D. Costello. J.D. Costello in a skinny tie with a shimmery jacket and holding a rule book, according to the Mod Squad. And they ran down the Fantastics and said they were going to win the belts.
And this was when... this wasn't the exact Memphis show. This was the edited version for like Memphis would run on Saturday morning. They would do the show live at the studio, and it would be 90 minutes. And
and
it was like a news broadcast almost, because we had Dave Brown. He's giving out the weather for the show the next week. He's telling you the weather so you can come out and see the show. So he had a segment on like missing kids every week, where they would highlight like a child's gone missing in Memphis or something, that would air on Saturday. But then the next Saturday, this was one of the shows that was on the You ever heard the term, like, on the bicycle in the territory? You know, where the tape goes from one place to the next place to the next place. And, like, it would go to, this was a show that aired in Evansville, like, a week later. It was an edited one-hour version. And so they would build up, like, matches on Tuesday night in Evansville, which were the same exact matches that they were having in Memphis on Monday. Like, say if they were doing, like a tournament for the Southern Tag Team titles, they would run the tournament in Memphis, in Evansville, and in Louisville for the next two weeks. They would do the same thing with, like, the Lose Lee Town matches, because everything, information was so slow back then that nobody caught up to it. You know, unless you went to all the shows that nobody did back then. So
Jerry Lawler basically had three Lose or Leave Town matches, according to the towns he was booked in.
Yeah, today it would seem stupid, you know.
You know, and that's three bigger paychecks, because you know the house would be bigger on Jerry Lawler having a loser's time. So that's actually smart business too. Besides, you know, the fact that they could get away. It's amazing how time has changed. Now people are flipping that shit.
Because this was actually in this promo, they actually spoiled this angle that was coming up. Because they had to promote the show, so they said, keep watching later in the show, because this Tuesday we're going to have the return of Jerry Lawler, and you hadn't seen anything yet, so it's kind of, something big is coming, you don't know when, you don't know where, but it kind of spoiled it.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Okay. Eddie Marlin interviewed Dutch Mantel from what looked like Dutch's living room. Dutch told the story of him and Bill Dundee partying up and down the road, and said that they parted ways, and Dundee ended up in Louisiana. Talked about how he would chew tobacco and play his guitar as Dundee would drive. And he said everything was good. But then they ended up back in CWA, and Dundee started hanging out with Landell, and Dutch didn't like the Dundee when he hung out with Landell.
Which means you don't like cokeheads.
Sure. We've all had one of those friends. Act like a dick.
He said Bill was a different man when Buddy was around. He said Bill started going to nice places, and he liked hanging out in, dive bars and such. He said, I didn't stop liking them. They stopped liking me. And he said he could whip them both, and they didn't appreciate them thinking he was a redneck. And then God is my witness, Eddie Marlin asked him if he still had that guitar, and Dutch got up, grabbed his guitar, and played beautifully.
And Eddie Marlin offered to ride to the towns with him.
That's right, and chew tobacco.
Dutch Mantel is so awesome.
Yeah.
He was a great promo, too.
This led to a match. It was Dutch Mantel versus Jerry Garman. Dutch came out. He had lots of headlock takeovers. Garmin fired back, and I swear to God, hit three punches, and then Dutch hit a power slam for the pin. This went about 3 minutes. And here's where it gets good. Buddy Landell, the Southern Heavyweight Champion, and Bill Dundee, the Mid-American Heavyweight Champion, had a match with David Johnson and Jim Jameson. The heels, Landell and Dundee, went crazy on these jobbers, just being really stiff and snug with them, slapping them, punching them. Yeah, just almost unprofessional. But, everybody gets a paycheck.
Bill Dundee, he's one of those guys, small guys, thought he was like 10 feet tall.
Yeah, exactly.
Like had that small man syndrome or something, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. It was good, though. I like Bill Dundee.
He was good. I liked him.
Mm-hmm. Jameson got tossed outside, and Dundee hit him with a body slam on the floor. You say, what's the big deal? Well, you know those pretty little blue mats they used to have? there wasn't none of them, and he slammed him. So it was pretty ridiculous, actually. Landell got the tag. He hit a corkscrew elbow drop and got the pin, again, about 3 to 4 minutes.
That was a big move.
Yeah. The heels then beat up the jobbers, and then Landell hits Jeff Jarrett, and proceeds to stomp a mud hole in him.
Do you think he weighed like more than 120 at this time? Because he was fucking skinny as shit.
I would say 135 at the very most.
These stomps look like it hurt too. I mean, he looked like
He was laying it in on very young Jeff Jarrett. Anyway, this got the ire up of Jerry Jarrett, who hit the ring and fires back at the heels, but then they overwhelmed him. And as Lance Russell said, they're going after Jerry's good eye, implying that he only had one.
He has like a glass eye, I think. He has some kind of thing.
Yeah. So Jeff Jarrett composes himself and he fires up and tries to make the save. Jerry escapes, but then they overwhelm Jeff and they lay him out. Dutch Mandel dives into the ring, makes the save. Russell and Brown are absolutely outraged, and they end it with a shot of Dutch Mantel and the ref carrying Jeff Jarrett to the back. And
Dutch Mantel's in his underwear like he was in the shower.
Yeah, that was kind of uncomfortable when he came out because, you know, we all know that he has a hairy chest and back, but I didn't know that his legs were so hairy too, and it was just like... I could have done without seeing him in just his underwear. He could have a little more clothes. I will say that Jeff actually, he fought for a good 30 seconds maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And what I liked,
what
I liked about it is it wasn't just all of a sudden this young referee all of a sudden starts whooping ass. He was just doing what he could, and that was just swinging, you know, wildly. And I thought that looked good because you don't want the young rookie referee to be like throwing badass punches and kicking people's ass. You want to look more legit. And he's just, all he's doing is fighting for his life, and then they overwhelmed him. But I thought that was great the way he fought back, because it was just how somebody who doesn't, you would expect someone who doesn't know how to fight back against somebody.
I love the excuses on some of these shows, like when they had the big heel beatdowns. Mm-hmm. There was like one door that came into the arena, and the heels would like block it shut, and nobody could get in. That was a good excuse to why nobody could help anyone. And I like that Dutch coming, like, you think, well, why isn't anybody out here? Why isn't Dutch out there yet? And, well, he's in the shower, so he's in his underwear out there. So that's a good excuse.
Yeah. And he has little tiny underwears on, too.
Okay.
He's the one that I expect to come out and, like, Mighty White's boxers or something, you know?
Yeah.
Not that I wanted to see it, but just the character.
And then for the first time in the show, we actually had some entrance music. And the entrance music was touched by ZZ Top. It hit, and the Fantastics made their way to ringside, being mobbed by young girls. They were announced as a Southern Tag Team Champion. And they were going to wrestle Keith Barry and Tony Falk.
Keith Eric.
Keith what?
What was the name? Keith Eric.
Well, Eric. Okay, my bad.
And then
again,
the girls were the Bartlett, Tennessee High School cheerleading squad who were guests in the
ring. Okay. So the bell rings and they go to lock up, and all of a sudden, Lance Russell interrupts the match. He tells the referee to stop. They're on a little recording studio type thing, and so the match stops, and Jerry Jarrett comes out and he's holding his eye. And he's weeping.
He was.
I never wanted my son to get involved. This is horrible. He goes off crying. They start the match again, but seconds later, Eddie Marlin comes out and he stops the match. He's saying Jerry is beside himself. He's upset. He wants Jerry Lawler to tag with Dutch Mantel to get Landell and Dundee.
Yeah, this was Lawler wasn't there because he lost Loser Leave Town like a couple of months before. So mm-hmm. This was back when the Loser Leaf towns were like 60 or 90 days. You know, you had to leave for that long, which actually, I don't know why they don't do this now. Just do like mm-hmm. 60 to 90 days instead of doing like the, you had to retire forever, or you're out of the company forever, stupid shit that they always go back on. And you give a guy a vacation or something like that, you know?
And they could totally play it up.
And basically, he just went on the road to all the territories and main evented everywhere else for two months.
Yeah, because when they would shoot this angle, then the box office would be huge, which it would. So,
not to mention, you could really play it off today. You know, if they gave him like a 60-day suspension or whatever, you could totally play it off like he's going to be losing money and this, that, and the other thing, and it's just something else that they just don't use anymore.
Also, Eddie Moreland, you know that this is Jerry Jarrett's father-in-law, right? Yes, father. So, yeah, that's
figured that out watching the angle when he was talking about how, like, you know, he was talking about
right.
that. So I was like, I actually didn't know that. I can't believe I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So anyway, they finally get the match going again. Of course, the Fantastics, as soon as the match gets going, hits a sweet double drop kick on Barry. Falk gets tagged in, and the announcers made a point to bring up that Falk had a very long losing streak.
Yeah.
Nice.
It was after this in some later episodes that every week he was coming out. Because this is when Jeff Jarrett started wrestling. And he wants to wrestle Jeff Jarrett because he can't beat anybody else. I know I can beat Jeff Jarrett. But, you know, he just started. Of course, Jarrett beats him. So. Did you ever see the gay act, Ed, when he was born?
Yeah, he basically did Boy George.
He came out to Do You Really Want to Hurt Me, a Culture Club,
yeah.
And did the gay act. It was pretty awesome.
That was really his, like, only, like, semi-push kind of. I also remember him being a referee a lot, too, around that time.
He was Cowboy Tony in World Class. You remember Cowboy Tony?
Yeah.
Excuse me. So Falk actually thumbs Fulton in the eye. They have somewhat of a heat segment, but not much. The comeback is very short-lived as Rogers hit a standing crossbody for the pinfall. This went about 4 minutes. Here's where the big faux pas happened. And Lance Russell talking in the back, he said the match was on Lawler and Mantell versus Dundee and Landell for this Wednesday night. Dundee and Landell versus Lawler and Mantell for Wednesday night. Dundee came out and he cut a passionate, profanity-laden promo. And he said he had run Lawler out of town before and he ain't scared of him and he was suing Jarrett. There you go. So they're back on the soundstage. Lance interviews Dutch Mantell. He said he was disgusted by Landell and Dundee's actions. He said Jeff and Jerry would be fine. And then Lawler actually called into the show. Let me set this up for you. Jerry Lawler was on the phone. The phones back then had cords on them. They then proceeded to grab said phone, but the cord was not long enough to actually make it past the curtain. So they pulled the curtain back, found a little bench of some kind, and set the phone. And so all of these folks, Lance Russell, Dutch Mantell, and Eddie Marlin, had to congregate around this little bench with the phone on top and a microphone way towards the back of the set.
Looks like they were laying down on the ground.
They were kneeling around this little bench. They had the microphone up to the phone, and I wrote lots of technical difficulties.
If they did this today, they would have a graphic. It would be of the United States. It would be You know, they would have, like, Michael Cole is in Memphis. They'd have a picture of Michael Cole and be sponsored by AT&T. And, you know, AT&T calling card or something. And they would have this big graphic of the United States. And this one, they just, well, you can go with what you can afford, I guess. I don't know.
They had a big budget in Memphis, obviously.
To say this was low rent would be giving it high praise. So finally,
this is awesome, though.
Finally, they get Lawler on the blower, and he says he's also disgusted with Landell and Dundee, and he says he hates their actions, and in fact, he hates Dundee's stinking guts. He said he was going to cancel all his bookings and that the King was coming back to town. Now, if you remember, I just said that Russell said in the last segment, Lawler and Mandel versus Dundee and Landell was on for Wednesday night. They blew their own angle minutes before they finally announced it.
Yes. Well, they had the show, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Dutch kneels down and starts yelling at the phone that has a cord that's way too short. And he asks Jerry to be his partner. Jerry said he'll fight with Mantell to take care of Dundee and Landell, and he ended by saying, the King is back.
And I'm sure they had a giant-ass gate that next week for these matches.
I'm sure. So it was main event time, and when I say main event time, they said main event till the time expired. So basically, if you can't pin the guy by the time they have airtime left, too bad.
Oh, no, and if you do... They just throw you out there for another fall. They just do another fall until the show does run out. They
so,
like, hey,
mod...
we got a few minutes left. Let's do another fall in that match. They send them back out there to do another fall.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So the mod squad hits the ring, and they're going to be wrestling Thunderbolt Hamilton and David Haskins. The Thunderbolt started off this match, and he hit the most athletic thing I saw on the whole show. He hit two very, very nice drop kicks, but then tagged in his partner Haskins, and Spike cut him off immediately with a knee to the back. Spike took the office. They got the heat on Haskins forever, and then hit a modified Doomsday device for the pin. And thank God they were out of time, because I didn't want to see any more.
As far as like every week, I mean, you got great angles. The angles were great. The actual in-ring wrestling was shit for the most part.
It was horrible.
The angles they did the angles were great, but I didn't care much about seeing the matches. You know, I just wanted to see more angles.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't help that they had the world's worst jobbers. These guys were so horrible, man. I mean,
so bad.
Yeah.
They had the worst
jobbers
I've ever seen.
Some of these guys. Some guy come out with Pink Mask. He's a Pink Panther. Some guy come out with the mask. He's a Super Destroyer. The Assassin. You know.
Oh,
and
my
this was when you would have the same guy doing the same thing. He would get booked more because he owned three masks. We could play three people, you know. But the shows, I love watching these old shows. They're great. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
It was less than an hour. Yep. They had a nice opening with Russell and Brown. And then at the end of the show, Russell and Brown recapped the show really quickly, and the show went off the air. It's 50 minutes of your time. It's no big deal.
And it felt like it was 2 hours while the stuff that went on in the show. But it didn't feel rushed. It just, you know, stuff was
they just
good.
Did the time. You know, they didn't make everything last 20, you know, you don't have a 2-minute interview last 20 minutes. You know, they just, everything lasts at the right amount of time, basically.
Apparently their phone setup was as good as their ring setup, because I was watching something from like 1984 and the chopper, and kind of thrown into the ropes, and the top rope broke, and he moved out backwards over the top of the ring and slammed on his head.
That's crazy.
The the funny thing, you picked out this show, and I was like, okay. I start watching it, and then everything starts making sense. We have Buddy Landell pass away this week. The other big news was Jeff Jarrett shows up at TNA on Wednesday night. So he's on the show. Nice pick on this one, Contreras. You are a wrestling historian, unlike myself.
And this was, you know, you talk about this was 3 years, like with like the highest rated wrestling show in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I think they even, like, the only thing rated higher in Memphis at the time was like episodes of Dallas, which was like the hottest show on TV at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, it was a fun show.
Yeah.
Real fun
show.
They're
kind of the wrestling they were at in that part of the country back then. I mean, they loved it.
Memphis is like Puerto Rico. It's like everybody thought it was real.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's good stuff. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Well, since we're on the subject.
Well, real quick, let me throw out my...
go ahead.
Go to youtube.com/Contreras. This is what the March 8th episode, 1986. You can find that there's a playlist for Memphis 1986, and look at the March 8th, 1986 episode, and you can watch this episode.
So while we were quickly on the subject, did you guys see Jeff Jarrett in TNA this week?
No, I only read about TNA. I don't watch it anymore.
Yeah, I don't
know.
I'm more fun to read about it.
My Twitter was kind of blowing up with a bunch of Jeff Jarrett news, and I actually went ahead and watched a little bit of it, and it was weird. It was really weird. It was kind of in the middle. It was right after a match. And the Pope and the other kid that does commentary, whose name is falling out of my
head.
Josh Matthews. Thank you, Josh Matthews. They're sitting there and they were talking about the match that just got over, and all of a sudden they look bewildered and they stand up and, oh my gosh, it's Jeff Jarrett. And he gets in the ring, and he's got a Global Force Wrestling shirt on. And Karen is there looking, well, come on, hot.
Please tell me she's keeping the name La Bruja.
Yeah. Anyway, he cuts a promo and said he didn't go out the way he wanted to go out. Karen actually. And said he was going to be in the King of the Mountain match for the pay-per-view this weekend. And I don't know where it goes from there. Crazy.
Yeah, I know they've apparently on the tapings they did after this, he wasn't on any of those. So I don't know if this is like a one-time thing or. I know they.
I don't think it's a one-time thing, but I think it's going to be kind of spread out.
Because I think they said after this weekend, like, I think Magnus is through in TNA. Because he's
going to
be doing Global Force Wrestling. And I don't know. Those Global Force Wrestling shows, they look kind of embarrassing when I saw some pictures the other day in that ballpark.
Yeah. They, I watched
the way you play a ballpark actually, when you're just doing your first shows. And then I want to go to a dark arena where nobody can see how many people aren't there.
they actually did some periscoping on, it was last week when we were talking, or the week before last. And there might have been 400 or 500 people in the stands of the show that they actually periscoped. It was pretty sad. I don't know if Jeff is looking to get back in. I don't know. It's weird.
Or if it's just big, like an invasion angle they're working on. You know?
Or I think maybe he's hoping if he kind of sticks around for right now, that come September, that Destination America might decide, hey, you know, we decided to keep some wrestling on, and since he's got his promotion right there under their nose, they might decide, hey, let's put you on.
Interesting.
Yeah, it will give his promotion a little bit, you know, it helps his promotion a little bit because they don't even have TV. So.
Right. And I don't know that they, I don't know if they can support TV, to be honest with you. I mean, a lot of the guys, like, they brought in Moose from ROH, and he's under contract with them. It's not like he's going to be doing their TV.
Doc,
the only way I can...
Doc are their priorities, you know, in New Japan, so they got to go on tours a little bit of the time.
And they're working with ROH very, very closely, all the New Japan guys, so I don't... It's weird. You could almost see, like, maybe ROH and TNA might end up in cahoots because of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe doing some kind of talent trade. Who knows? I mean, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, they've got people talking, which is at least good. If nothing else, you know. I mean,
yeah. Nobody else has been talking about
them
for a while.
I was listening to David and Brian on the, I think it was the Wednesday night Observer Radio. And all these people in TNA were like bad mouthing Jarrett, and he shows back up.
Yeah.
You know, they're just hugging the guy. You never knew.
Yeah.
But TNA needs something like this more than anything else. I mean, they'll just go after the next, what they call it, like, you know, this isn't one. It's like they'll go for trying to find the next big idea so they bring Jeff Jarrett back or something like that.
Right.
You know, it's a. Have something to do because, I mean, I'm not going to watch the pay-per-view on Sunday. I got no interest in it, especially since Kurt Angle already lost the world title last night. Sorry for the spoilers. EC3 at the tapings. Because they did all the tapings for the pay-per-view after, it's taking place after the pay-per-view, before the pay-per-view. It don't make no damn sense to me. But whatever.
Yeah, that's on them.
Yeah, that's like when
WCW
used to record at Universal for weeks at a time and five different dudes would come out with the same belt and shit.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like it's so close to a pay-per-view. Why wouldn't you couldn't just wait like a day till after the pay-per-view to do these tapings or something, you know? I mean, I don't know.
Would have made sense.
I always hated when WCW would do, even though I knew it wasn't real, it was just that, oh, come on. I don't need to know everybody's going to win a title in the next 6 months. Jesus.
Yeah, well, it's typical TNA. But,
would anybody know what they're putting on this hook on this King Mountain match at Slammiversary? I mean, did they put something on this hook to win the match? It's not a title match. So.
Right. It's, it's kind of funny. It's got people talking about TNA right now. Which nobody's been talking about them for a while. But in all honesty, it's kind of a lateral move. I mean, Jeff Jarrett hasn't been relevant in a long time.
It's something, but it's not nothing that's really like substance. You know what I mean? I mean, it is something, but it's not like, you know, it's like, it's, I don't know how to say it. It's more like just there. I mean, it's something to talk about, but it's not
it,
like...
It looks like something, but it's probably going to end up being nothing.
Yeah, you're right. That's the perfect word to say it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they probably needed him to come in so they put somebody in their shitty Hall of Fame and AJ Styles on the fuck off.
By the way...
TNA people, AJ Styles and all those guys are doing great. Because they're in Christopher Daniels and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yep, that was...
I left the TNA fans. I get on the threads on the board. It's like the TNA Asylum threads. They talk about TNA Mecca. I don't know if you've ever been there. It's one of those crazy fan sites.
I just see the things that are over tweets about them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I mean...
You know, you mentioned Daniels and Kazarian. I'll even throw out something even more kind of absurd about someone who's doing better since even TNA... Santana Garrett, TNA Brittany. She's left TNA.
True.
She's now the Shine champion. She's the NWA Women's champion. She works every Friday and Saturday, it seems like. I mean, leaving TNA was the best thing she ever did, it seems like.
These independents were running more than TNA did.
Yep.
It's supposed to be like a national promotion. I mean,
and how about Hernandez leaves Lucha Underground to come back to TNA?
That's just stupidity right there.
And
well, Lucha Underground is like a...
There's more job security. Like, if they were already announced for a second season, it'd be a little different. So I guess I can kind of see that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'd prefer to stay with Lucha Underground than TNA. At least one has a good buzz while the other one has a bad buzz.
And they,
never picked up. I was watching this awesome documentary on, like, the Friday the 13th films. Like, I grew into, like, the 7-hour documentary on Amazon. I'm making all the Friday the 13th films. And who should show up there but Jeff Katz? He's one of the talking heads. Do you remember him?
Name sounds familiar.
Yeah, I remember that name.
He was the one doing, what was the Wrestling Retribution Project?
He's the one that he collected all that money and then disappeared for years. I mean, Dave Prey
that he hired Lance for, right? Lance was like doing some of the booking
or
something.
Lance did some work with that.
Yeah, and he was like one of the talking heads in the documentary because he was working for like New Line Cinema and stuff during some of these Friday the 13th films. I thought it was funny.
Huh. Also on Impact, not only did we get Jeff Jarrett, but we got Hernandez, and we got Matt Morgan back. He wasn't doing nothing, so what the heck. And then Vader as well. Who
was Vader wearing Crocs?
Crocs.
Those
Crocs.
Shoes with the holes?
No, he was wearing a black muscle shirt, a t-shirt with his, sleeves ripped off. He was wearing black track pants with the stripe up the side and all, and tennis shoes and his mask.
Okay. Okay, I think he was wearing Crocs or something.
He fell down getting out of the ring?
He did not fall down. He did very well. He did not take one bump.
Pants up, though.
He did. He went to do the Vader bomb, but hiked up his shirt and then pulled his britches up at least waist high and more. And and then missed a Vader bomb, immediately started selling his belly, and I can't even remember who he worked. Anyway, he got pinned. But,
it was Bram.
It was kind of sad.
Real quick, I was talking about some of these TNA fan sites, and I get all my stuff. I don't go to any of them. I just get my feel on the board because everybody does screen caps with all their nonsense. And, everybody thinks Dave's a liar. Dave just got up one morning and decided to say the show was canceled, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
He had nothing better to do. And and anyway, they'd say, Dave, like, because like obviously he isn't getting any ratings that TNA does. First off, they have it's the second airing of that show. For people to get the Sinclair shows, like what? The weekend, like 5 days before, is when that show first airs.
Correct.
Sinclair said, these ROH fans were really dedicated. They would just tune into Destination America instead of staying up until 1 o'clock in the morning to watch a Sinclair station. It's 2015. Nobody's staying up till 1 o'clock in the morning to watch nothing. They're either already up at 1 o'clock in the morning or they DVR the fucking thing. So
right.
It's like, 1995 when you just discovered ECW on the fucking Prime Network and you don't trust your VCR to take it and you have to stay up. Which we've all been there, so, I used to worry about my VCR going. I used to set my VCR for set it for the show and set it for like 3 hours after, just in case.
Just in case.
Just me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I tried to tape TBS and I turn it on as one of the fucking Braves games, motherfuckers.
I hated the Braves.
Then,
I hated baseball just for the fact that they would preempt 1 hour or something, 2 hours of fucking Saturday night TBS wrestling.
And then the game would be over and they'd show this time clock come up and say, we've joined now in progress. And the show's half fucking over.
Yeah.
If you own your own network, you can't see the whole show. Really? Anyway.
Well, I had only set the show for an hour, but I still want to talk about this road trip that I took. So we are going to go a little long past the after the show feed cuts off. So let me draw the plugs first. Everyone, check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com, along with a lot of other shows. Check out AngryMarks.com. You can also download and stream the show at blogtalkradio.com/Couture and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo, and you can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio.
And you can follow me on Twitter. It's my last name, Proper, and then the word Jam after it. So Proper Jam, Proper Jam, and that's where I'm at, folks.
You can go to youtube.com/Couture. That's C-U-T-R-E-R. I got a bunch of years of this Memphis stuff we've been talking about up there, so I'm going to go there and check it out. Couture35 on Twitter. I don't tweet, so anyway.
Okay. Well, basically, this past Sunday, I took a road trip with another board member. His Twitter handler, Skull Crane, and we went up to Austin to see Inspire Pro Wrestling. And I've gone to about 5 shows in Austin, and usually it involves either Leva Bates, Mia Yim, or Solo Darling. That's usually what gets me there. But while I was at this show, they had this one kid come out who I've seen on pretty much all the shows that I've been to, like the first Anarchy Championship Wrestling he was on. And as soon as he came out, it's like I could just see that this kid's just got so much more personality and charisma than any of the other guys on the show for the most part. And I just see that every time I saw him. And this past Sunday, he wasn't on the show, but he was doing commentary, and then he came out and cut a promo to promote the main event for the next month. And like I say, usually it takes, you know, Leva, me, or Solo to get me there. I don't care if they're on or not on the show. I don't care if they bring any other women's wrestlers. I saw this guy cut this promo, and I'm going to be there next month, or I think it's August 9th, to see this match, because this kid just cut one of the best money promos that I've heard in a long time, and it was kind of old school because he actually put his opponent over, which that kind of went out the deal towards the late 80s. Now you got to make fun of the little your opponent. He put over the match, put over the promotion. He was fiery. He didn't have to cuss to get the cheap heat or anything. He just cut like about a 5-minute promo, basically just talking from the heart, and just got me so excited for this match. So I'm driving to Austin to see an indie show. And like I say, I don't care if Leva, me, or Solo, or any of those other girls that really late are on. So it's like, they posted this on Twitter, so I got it, and I sent it to you guys. Did you guys have a chance to check it out?
I did.
Yeah.
The guy's got real good delivery. He's got good charisma. He's well-spoken. I believed he believed what he was saying, which a lot of times, on when I'm watching Monday Night Raw, I don't believe that's the case. And he's a great promo. I would buy what he was selling.
Hey, Katrina, what did you think of the promo?
Yeah, just to kind of echo what Craig said, good delivery, and it was awesome promo.
Yeah,
I suspected they just put up some new episodes of Hulk Hogan's Rough and Wrestling.
Okay.
I didn't hear what you said. What was the first part of
it? I said kind of echoing what Craig said. That the, you know, good delivery, look. Do you guys watch Chef Enough this week?
I have not seen it yet.
You haven't seen it yet? Have you?
I haven't seen it. I just saw like tiny little clips on it. It seemed like the Tough Talk was way better than the actual Tough Enough show. But
the show was good. I could do without running up and down the stadium steps. I don't know what that accomplishes except to make you vomit.
It's to make the fat guy look better. Basically, what it is.
He's the only guy on there that sticks out though. Is the funny thing? Yeah. And I mean, he was talking about, people doing just natural promos. This guy's, I couldn't imagine a WWE writer writing for the guy that ZZ on the show. He's the Gator wrestler from, like, Louisiana. And, like, couldn't imagine, WWE writers writing anything for him. Because he's one of those, you know how those country people have got some of those natural, just, like, funny lines that only they can say and come up with?
Yep.
You know, and it's a good thing that the voting is fan voting, which means he'll probably be there to the end and maybe even win the thing. Because when he did the fan voting, he got like 70% of the vote, I think, to stay. So,
wow.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, like I say, I haven't seen it, so I really can't talk about it. But I want to talk some more about this show that I went to. It's funny, I had tweeted when, I had called into Wrestling Observer Live and I had talked about being excited because besides Leva being on the show, Teddy Hart and Teddy Hart's cat were also on the show, and I was excited to see Mr. Money, and I was very excited to that. And I tweeted Brian the poster to this show, which they brought in names like Ray Rowe, Lance Hoyt, Leva, Vita Scott, Vanessa Craven, a few other people. And basically there was a match with three masked guys. The Hooded Menace, one of them was the Hollywood Strangler, who was just a guy in a mask who grunted. The Red Scare, who had like a totally red mask, no face, and he had like a 50s kind of a suit. And then the Great Depression, who's just this big burly guy wearing a burlap sack with a face painted on it. And Brian fell in love with the guy just from the picture. And they basically were just in a squash match. But it was awesome. It was just awesome seeing these weird characters just go in there and kill a dude and be all menacing. They're just total throwback gimmicks, but pretty awesome. Before that show is we were road tripping in Austin, but I had got, the paper out that night, and I had just gotten home, and I started getting messages that I missed my flight. I don't know what to do. I can't get a hold of the promoter. And basically, Leva had, got to the airport, right 3 minutes after the cutoff date, so they wouldn't let her get on the plane and shit. So she's tripping because she can't get a hold of the promoter. So finally, I'm like, well, shit, if he can fly you anywhere else, I'll go pick you up and stuff. So she finally gets a hold of him, and they end up flying her to Dallas. And luckily, Athena was on the show, and so they just called her and said, hey, just don't leave yet. Just wait till you get Leva, and then they get there. And I think they got there, right after bell time. But at least she made it, which was kind of scary. I would have been pissed because that's the reason why I went to the show. But she made it. She had a match with Vita Scott. It was pretty awesome. Vita is she's pretty cute, man. But
yep.
She's tiny as hell. She's so freaking short.
Yes.
And anytime I had been close to her before, she was always fully dressed. She wasn't in her wrestling gear, so it's always had that opinion that she was super petite. But I got to get to talk to her while she was in her gear and take a photo, and it's yeah, she's super short, but she's actually got these fucking thick-ass thighs, and, she's actually got a nice, thick body, man. It's just amazing. It was weird because I always thought she was so, but she's just short, but, yeah, in her gear, she looked really good, and they had a good match, and Teddy Hart, he wasn't the Teddy Hart of old that was nonstop, just total spot after spot. But he still did like a springboard, a Saiyan moonsault to the outside, and he still did a few. He would do these fucking backcrackers where basically it wasn't like your Carlito backcracker. Basically, he would start doing a power bomb and then jump into a backcracker, and it looked like it was killing the other dude, and it looked like it was killing his knees. In fact, he started selling his knee. I don't know if he heard it for real or was just selling, but it was interesting seeing Teddy there. And I know Brian on Wrestling Observer, he was like, how is Teddy going to do this show? Because he's in trouble, right? I don't even know what he's in trouble for. I just know he's in trouble. But apparently the story I got there is the reason he was able to come to the show is he just hasn't gone back to Canada yet. So he's basically on the run here in the U.S., kind of. That's the story I kind of got. So
what's
he going
on the run for?
I don't remember what it is, but his lawyer's working on it. But as soon as he goes back to Canada, he'll get arrested, or that's when he'll get in trouble. So he just hasn't gone back to Canada, and he's been doing, like, lucha shows around the border. Sometimes he gets into Mexico, and that's how he was able to work the show, is he just hasn't gone back to Canada. So he probably won't go back to Canada until the lawyer has this all worked out. But but he looked good. I mean, he's still in good shape, and it was a good match, and it was cool seeing him. And the cat is, like, the most docile, calm, no care in the world cat, because Teddy came out with this, like, hot little blonde who basically her job was to hold Mr. Money. And basically she cradled him like a baby the whole match. He never, like, hardly moved. He just there with his paws up and looking up, and I don't know. I think this cat might be on gimmicks or something. But it was a beautiful cat. But that was awesome getting to see that and stuff. But this is Fire Pro Wrestling, man.
Here's your legal update on Teddy Hart real quick.
Okay.
On December 3rd, 2014, Royal Canadian Mounted Police announced that he was wanted on multiple sexual assault charges involving two women. That's all it says.
Whoa.
That's probably what it is.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's kind of like a throwback to, like, the 80s, like with, like, Art Barr and other wrestlers who would get in trouble for that and then have to leave the territory for a while. But, yeah, so hopefully, you know, who knows what happened, what's real, what's not real. Hopefully it gets taken care of. And shit, he is a talent, but who knows with Teddy. He's got a reputation to beating to a different drummer and doing his own thing. So
basically kind of being a dumbass.
Yeah, basically. And but we'll see what happens with that. And this is Fire Pro Wrestling, man. It's like, it's such a cool little promotion. Like, there's three promotions here in South Texas, basically. There's, like, the San Antonio one, River City Wrestling, which we've had Brandon Oliver on the show a bunch of times. And I've always enjoyed their shows, but they just don't bring in talent. Like, they'll bring in, like, cheerleader Melissa, or they'll bring in Hernandez. Someone like, they'll bring in Trina Michaels every once in a while. But as far as, like, talent, it's all, like, local, homegrown. And it's just, I don't care to see just indie nobody wrestling. I guess I'm a snob, and I just don't want to see that. And the other two in Austin are Anarchy, which is more of a hardcore, which I've enjoyed their shows, and then Inspire, which is more like a higher class looking. And they use a lot of the same talent and stuff. The guy who runs Inspire used to help with Anarchy. But they have this awesome theater, the Marchesa Hall, and you walk in there, and it's got this giant full bar and a nice fucking lobby. And then you start to go in, and before you get to where the ring is, there's this wall. And you would love this wall, Craig, because this wall has just got all these old vinyl covers. A lot of them are nice. Like movie soundtracks, like Urban Cowboy, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Graduate, just beautiful album,
cool.
Just the whole wall, yeah. And then the ring, where the ring is, it's like a big square. It's not really that big. It's kind of small, but it's kind of perfect because it gets everything real close. And then they have, like, on one end, they have, like, the stage that's elevated, and that's where they do commentary and have the guys. And they have a ramp that goes from the stage to the ring. So the wrestlers are never on your level. They're always, like, above you. Like, they really look like stars when they come out. The way it's kind of like, you know, a WWE kind of setup, the way they get to the ring. And real high class. And then they have, they bring in people all the time. They always bring in women. Like known women wrestlers, and they always bring in. They had Ricochet in the last show.
Nice.
They bring in a lot of Chikara guys. They really go out of their way to bring in talent, and they just have these awesome shows. So anyone who's in Texas or South Texas, if you ever get a chance to see Inspire Pro Wrestling, I think you can buy their videos, DVDs, or MP4s on Mark Video. I think, could be wrong, but I would highly suggest people checking that out or looking to Inspire Pro Wrestling, because it's. I can see them making some waves in the future as far as an indie. I mean, they really got their shit together, and they're highly enjoyable. And like I say, for like the last few shows, it always took somebody that I knew to get me there. But like I say, I'm going to be at the next one, and it doesn't even matter who's on the show, because I just want to see the match. And that's just how much I enjoy everything. So it's like, I'll be taking a road trip on August 9th to see it. And that should be cool. And like I say, the reason I went to see it is it was to go to see Leva Bates, of course. But just a real side note, I noticed she had tweeted the WWE's tweet about the NXT house show, and tonight in Cocoa something Florida, I'm not too sure exactly where, but I was like, well, I wonder if she's on the show. Well, not only is she on the show, but she's working Sasha, and it might actually be the main event, because the women have been the main event for the last few house shows, so that's a good sign. I'm happy about that. Hopefully they'll start using her for more of these house shows and stuff, and give her a few more paydays, and maybe finally fucking sign her.
Yeah. That's crazy. So let me ask you this. You like these indies around your area, and I know Austin's quite a ways away. ROH runs your town every 3 months. What's the deal?
I've gone to, I don't consider them an indie, for one thing. But, I mean, I've gone to their show. I don't like the venue. The venue kind of sucks where they do ROH.
Okay.
And I am going, for sure. I already have tickets for the Saturday show on the next one. I should be going to the Friday one, too. I don't like the venue. I don't consider them an indie, so I don't want to put them with Inspire or River City Wrestling. But, they have good shows. I remember going to see ACH. Like, the first one, they had ACH, who was, advertised as the hometown boy against Jay Lethal. And they, goddamn, they had a hell of a match. They had all of ACH's family ringside. I never seen so many black people at an indie show in San Antonio before. But and then they all left after his match, too. But it was an awesome match. Jay Lethal, and then Jay Lethal won, of course, but then he put over ACH on the mic. And, yeah, they have great shows, but like I say, it's just I don't consider them an indie. But, yeah, I will be at the next one. I was supposed to go to the last one. I just had something, some family thing came up, and I had to cancel or miss it last minute. But, yeah, I'm glad that they come every – I'm glad, especially because they're doing, two shows on the next one. I mean, that's a good sign for San Antonio.
Cool.
I guess they get good – they show them twice here. So I'm assuming they get good ratings and stuff. So the crowds have been pretty decent too. I mean, they fill that place up. It's just a square room that's not elevated. Everything, it's just right. I just don't like the venue. It's just that sucks. But everything else. ROH is badass.
Yeah, their TV show from last week on Sinclair and Wednesday on Destination America was off the charts good.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think Global Force Wrestling is actually coming to San Antonio to do work with the baseball stadium here.
There you go. But anyway, check out this show. It was really good. We had Nakamura and Roderick Strong. Great match, hit each other really hard, and then you had Elgin and Ghetto, which was okay, and then the main event, the Bullet Club, consisting of the Young Bucks and AJ Styles versus Trent Beretta, Okada, and
and the Rocky Romero?
Thank you, Rocky Romero. Good night. And
yeah,
I watched
this match before we drove to Austin. We actually watched this match.
This match was so fun. It was so fun to watch.
You know what would make
that
match even better than it was? Is after they hit the tombstone, the super kicks, the Styles Clash, he should have kicked out, and then they should have pinned him with a roll-up.
Hmm. It is the most dangerous move in all of wrestling, or what I've heard.
It was good.
Very good. Loved it. So, check that out. Anyway.
I watched on Netflix, I watched the WWE film Leprechaun Origins with Hornswoggle.
Okay.
Horrible.
You don't say.
And even tells Hornswoggle he's dressed up like a monster. So that kind of killed the whole thing. running around looking like Hornswoggle in fucking movies. More like he just made up like a monster.
ran into Hornswoggle at the WrestleCon show.
Yeah, he was at WrestleCon. That's right.
Man, that guy's short.
I wish he was here and asked for that 85 minutes of my life back.
Did you see him in the Muppet movie that he was in?
No. I own it because I have a, you know, son. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, that was funny. But I guess we can go ahead and end the show unless we had, unless you guys had anything else you want to talk about. Craig?
No, I've got all my stuff in.
Okay, Katrair?
No, I'm ready to go. I'm on season 2 of Seinfeld on Hulu.
I love it.
Man, we still get, like, TBS shows them, like, what, 2 or 4 episodes a night? I pretty much watch at least one episode almost every day, it seems like. And I've been doing that for, I don't know, fucking how long. That's probably one of the greatest comedies of all time.
Yeah, they put all the seasons up on Hulu. I've just been watching the shit out of them.
They made some money off of that because that was like supposedly some kind of big ass fucking money deal that Hulu threw down. So good for all of them. But we'll go ahead and end the show on that. Everybody comes back next week.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the man's shit. Let's go hook him up. Tonight.